the game of cameras is all it's ever been and all it ever will be, as far as I'm concerned or anybody else is assessing age class. It doesn't matter if you're hunting whitetails in Ohio or mule deer down in the desert.
Right.
We're trying to figure out what the age class is, what we pass on, what we don't pass on, what we're going for opening day. Elk have a whitetail behavior, and it's fact that wallows are scrapes. So if you understand what a scrape is for a whitetail, whitetails come in and they lick a branch and they scrape on the ground and they piss in it and they move on. And they'll do it at every scrape they see because it's like a time clock. And all they're doing is checking to see who hit that time clock, who was in last, what time it was,
yep.
And then they move on. Well, wallows are the same thing with elk. So yeah, there might be a fresh puddle sitting in the sandstone or sitting, you know, but he's going to walk to that wallow because he knows, I want to see who was here last. Do we have any cows in the area? How long ago were they here?
Right.
That's what he's trying to find out. The more prepared you can be, the more knowledgeable about behavior, and the more boots on the ground. There's always this thing. I always feel like the guys who put in the most effort, whether they're smart or stupid, or fate always just seems to walk a line for them. It's really strange. And so I'm like, even if you don't know what you're doing, put in the effort.
Yeah.
Make notes. Walk into an area. See what you can see. Like, actually pay attention to what's going on. Like, you're going to figure it out. And all that time you're putting in there, I promise, is going to pay out. We've made these things look cool. We've shown what animals can do. We've put the mark on their head. And because of the bottom line of supply and demand, basic business, the dollar's increased. It's forced out the little guy and turns certain things ugly.
Hey guys, welcome to 2024. Thank you for all the years of support. Been at this a long time and appreciate you sticking with me. And if you're a new listener, thank you for tuning in. If you could help me out by going to iTunes or Spotify and leaving us a review, I really appreciate it. It helps me keep this free. Speaking of keeping this free, check out Phoenix Shooting Bags. Use promo code JohnStallone to save 20% on everything that they have. And lastly, if you could, do yourself a favor. Help protect hunting. Help protect your heritage and get involved with Howl Wildlife. That's Howl, H-O-W-L. For wildlife.org. Go check it out. Get involved. Without further ado, let's jump into this episode. Hi, welcome to Days in the Wild Big Game Hunting Podcast. This coming live, I guess. Well, not really live because we're not airing it live, but we are in person.
Yeah.
Yes, at Hunt Expo, and I'm with Ryan Carter. And you know, Ryan and I go back a long time, and we haven't caught up in a long time. I haven't seen you. I think last year I ran into you here for like 5 seconds, but that was about
it. Fist bump, that's about it. Other than that, it's been 3 years, 4 years.
Yeah. Yeah. So what's new in the life, man?
Nothing. Kids are older. I'm fatter.
I know what that's like.
Got a few more guys running with me now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Things have been good.
Yeah. It looks like the guide business is doing good. You're kind of branching out, going to different states.
Yeah.
You guys were in Arizona last year too, right?
No, haven't been to Arizona since 21.
Oh, it was 21.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Well, I thought it was 20. Yeah, okay. Shit. That's like, yeah.
That was like 2 days ago.
Yeah.
My brain. Life's going fast right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
It's been good, man. Life's good. You?
I can't complain. I mean, I can. I got a lot of stuff to complain about, but nobody cares. You know,
isn't that the truth?
Yeah, nobody wants to hear about me bitching about my issues. But yeah, no, things are good. Like my business is great. Howl for Wildlife is just catching fire, which is amazing. It's snowballing. Hell, freaking Joe Rogan mentioned they were. I was mentioned on Joe Rogan by Cam Haines on their last podcast, which I thought was freaking awesome.
And I think it's the second time they brought it up.
Yeah,
so that was really cool.
Yeah. Meat Eater's been, you know, Giannis has kind of been a big proponent of ours for a very long time. We've only been around for 2 years, but pretty much since inception. He is actually going to come in the booth today and hang out. So that's helped a lot. You know, obviously he's got the Meat Eater connection. So him, and he's well respected, you know, the way he's very well presented, talks well, you know, with people and has a smart outlook on things. So that in itself, you know, helps big time. But I think it's really just about down to the messaging that we've had. People are starting to realize, they see the writing on the wall, like, hell, shit, okay, that makes sense. And we've been as transparent as possible, mm-hmm. trying to eliminate, you know, we looked at the NGO world and kind of looked at all the things that were bad about it. I don't want to say bad about it, but things that like people had reservations about, you know, they're worried about where their money's going.
Yeah, I was going to say, explain what NGO world is. What?
Yeah, so NGO is like your
Nonprofits.
All your nonprofits, yeah, basically.
Yeah, I was following you. I just wanted
Yeah, no, it's good for people to understand that for sure. Thank you. You know, and it's hard to talk about this because I don't want to throw people under the bus because, you know, the acronym groups do a lot of the yeoman's work when it comes to, or not a lot, they do all the work pretty much when it comes to, like, putting animals back on the mountain. And that's what they were designed to do. But there's some, like, a certain mistrust there because people think they're giving money to do something and something else happens.
100%.
So.
Because it's been shown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and we're trying to change that. We're having conversations with other organizations to kind of help direct that, you know, so one, there's no confusion and people understand what they're doing, where their money's going. And two, just because we're trying to create a cohesive community. And, you know, we're always referred to hunting as the hunting industry. Mm-hmm. We don't refer to it as the hunting community.
Right.
So anyway.
Which is kind of sad.
Yeah.
I mean, that could be a whole talk itself, but.
Yeah. Yeah. And for the purpose of this podcast, because when I do the Howlcast, we talk about the stuff all the time and I don't want to, I'm here talking about it every day
right.
to everybody. I almost lost my voice yesterday and it was only Thursday.
Good.
Yeah. It was cool because I even Remy Warren invited me to speak at his seminar and Mark Smith invited me to speak at his seminar and Johnny Mack invited us. I'm actually going to have Mike's going to do that one, Mike Costello.
Big hitters.
Yes.
There you go. Yeah.
No, it's good. You know, we're connecting with people on a one-on-one basis, mm-hmm. which is, you know, up until now, what we haven't been doing because we've been doing it all through social media and through, you know, podcasts. Well, podcasting is great because, you know, people hear the full, it's more a nuanced conversation versus just a meme or, yeah. you know, whatever. So.
Or reading the jargon that goes over your head half the time. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. The conversation's always better.
Yeah. And it's tough. I think that's why I kind of do well when I speak to people because I don't speak as technical or as I'm not as well versed.
Layman's terms.
I speak in more layman's terms so people understand me a little bit better, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah. It's just a kid from Brooklyn, you know.
Right. Yeah, and you can hear that. That hasn't gone away.
I know. You know, it's crazy. I've been living in Arizona 33 years.
Wow.
Almost. I moved just before I turned 16. So, more than double the time, or almost double the time, I should say.
Yeah.
Or about double the time in Arizona as I was in New York. But the New York hasn't left me, which is I'm okay with.
Yeah.
It's a great place to be from. I wouldn't want to live there anymore.
Right.
It's a great place to be from.
Yeah.
So, Ryan's, you've been on the podcast so a couple of times. We've talked elk. This guy's bugling in the background over here. We hear that all day long.
Oh, dude, that's, I didn't even hear it. Second nature. Come on.
and you actually have still one of your podcasts with me is one of the most listen to podcasts. It's in the top 15.
Really?
And you know, coming from a guy who's got on the big platforms, there's like 500 and something episodes, but I've been doing this now for almost 19 years.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's freaking nuts.
That's good.
So that's a good tip of the hat to you, man.
Thank you.
Feather in your cap. You
can hold a little water sometimes.
Yeah.
That's good.
So let's talk about elk hunting a little bit, I guess. I know, so, you know, you did things last time we spoke about this, and I know you personally, we've had this conversation before. You do things differently when it comes to, like, trying to locate big bulls. You ran cameras and stuff. Like, now that's kind of changed was because – didn't Utah lost their camera usage too, right?
Not completely. Like, we have a season.
Oh, you have a season. Okay.
Yeah. So, technically, I could be running cameras right now. It's like January 1st to July 31st, something like that. But I technically put out cameras July 1st-ish.
Uh-huh.
And get them all pulled the 31st.
Okay,
and
so now it's just a, you just get them in and out versus what you used to do.
The game of cameras is all it's ever been and all it ever will be, as far as I'm concerned or anybody else is assessing age class.
Right.
It doesn't matter if you're hunting whitetails in Ohio or, you know, mule deer down in the desert.
Right.
We're trying to figure out what the age class is, what we pass on, what we don't pass on, what we're going for opening day.
Didn't help you do any kind of patterning and stuff like that?
Well, no, because I'm able to piece together kind of what bulls are what bulls. Just, you know, those 4 weeks are enough for me to kind of throw things together. And really, that kind of patterning only works for those last 2 weeks in September, which a lot of states don't even get. Utah does. So I still have these opportunities to get them off tree stands or water.
Right.
You know, some kind of setup. I do have slight opportunity, but then everything shifts September 1st.
Right. So. Of course, once the rut starts,
yeah,
everything you freaking thought you knew is out the door.
Right. And so, no, it didn't change anything for me as far as what I do and any of that kind of stuff. I can say I haven't. Well, no, I guess Isaac did. I was going to say, I don't think we've shot any, like, big bulls off tree stands since the change. But Isaac Olimon did over there with Allen. He shot a pretty nice bull.
Yeah.
So I guess I can't even say that. But yeah, it's been a little different.
Yeah, I think from the way I noticed it, like, when we lost it in Arizona, is you couldn't show, like, coming from a guiding perspective, I couldn't show, and even personally, show a client, oh, this buck or this bull or whatever was coming to this water or, you know, coming through this trail or whatever this frequent, you know,
right,
like leading up to the hunt or whatever. So the confidence level goes down. Like you might have personal confidence in, but it's hard for you to give the person that's got to go sit in that tree stand for 10 hours
the confidence,
but without showing them, hey, look, you got to hang out here because look what's coming through here.
That's a valid point. You know, I had, I don't know if you know Darren Cooper. He was an engineer for Hoyt for like 15 years.
I do not know.
He does podcasts with Dudley. He's just one of those left brain thinkers, but he kills a lot of stuff. And Darren was in my camp last year. Darren wanted to, like, full press, go after this one particular bull, which I love.
Yeah.
Like, on it. You can do it. These are the two areas he hits the hardest. He kind of, as he strips his velvet, he moves into here, but he pulls right back. So ground blind. Well, I had three other bow hunters in camp, and the two of them were staying with me, and, man, they were on bulls. Like,
yeah.
We'd find a bull, we'd put him to bed, they'd put in a stock. Wasn't playing out. And I remember Darren telling me, like, at one moment, he's like, dude, put me in, coach. Because the confidence that you're talking about, like, is kind of wavering. Like, it's not like he had the camera proof he was coming by at night or something. Yep. There was nothing there. And I said, Darren, dude, you don't need to prove yourself to me. I know who you are.
Right.
Like, if you want to stay on this bull, we're going to stay doing this. But God, you want me to put you in? You want to do a few plays? Let's go.
Right.
You know, and turns out number two bull showed up. We shifted gear. He almost killed that morning. Next morning, he shot another bull. It's here at the show. It's pretty awesome. 63-inch wide.
Oh, shit.
Just cool bull.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. So, yeah, the confidence thing kind of shakes on the clientele a little bit. Not for me. Like, I know what these bulls do.
Right, because you're in there. But
yeah,
it's that, you know, giving them the confidence.
So, yeah, it does change the game a little bit, because in all reality, if I was in his shoes with that same tag, I would have still been sitting in that spot.
Right.
Like, till end of tag. I know that bull was in there. In fact, we killed another bull just as big right off that blind a week later.
Okay, see.
So I knew he was in the right spot. It was just a matter of keeping the confidence up, you know, and Darren didn't care. He killed an awesome bull, so he's stoked about everything.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I saw that the last couple of years. And now for us, archery season's been, it's been so difficult for deer. We used to have the over-the-counter deal, and it was, I could count on that. You know, we sold a lot of hunts during that time frame because, one, I have a following for archery, and two, it was you know, people didn't have to draw, right? It was like an easy, like an easy sell, or you can, and you can plan. That's the biggest thing. You know, people don't, can't plan. You don't find out until you get, you know, drawn or whatever. It's tough.
Yeah.
But I noticed since we haven't had cameras that when we want to go stick somebody on a water hole, they're less excited about it because they're like, well, how do you know? I mean, yeah, we see tracks, but how do you know? And we don't even know. Like, we know from historically that this is a great water hole. I can see a lot of tracks. We've glassed here. We've seen bucks in the vicinity that we would kill, you know. But because I don't even have that season to even say what kind of age class is there, it's even harder. It's
it turns into the, hey, man, there's not another water source for 6 miles.
Right.
It's science. He's going to be here.
Exactly.
That's not science. No, it's science.
It is science. Exactly. So, no, yeah, it's not a fun conversation when you have to convince people, and you know, and I really don't care because we'll do whatever the client wants. We'll take them spot and stalk, whatever, if that's what you want to do. Mm-hmm. You get to see a lot more deer, your opportunity rate's gonna go way the hell down. You know, unless you're a ninja.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, and there's those.
Yeah,
so we're just not all there.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not. Should have been doing this forever. I'm definitely not a ninja still. This guy is.
Yeah.
Do you know who Amini Warner is?
I don't.
Yeah. He's a freaking absolute ninja. They actually make stalking boots now.
Oh, yeah.
Gullo, G-U-L-O. And he just made me my own special pair. His brother Wesley makes them, actually.
That's rad.
Yeah. They're pretty nuts. But, yeah. So, trail cameras aside, whatever. You know, now that you kind of don't have this, you know, minute by minute intel, what's your approach like if you know that there's elk, a good bull in an area, okay, you know, he's occupying X amount of acres or this drainage and that drainage, whatever, what is your approach to try to target that bull, like as far as
pre-rut, we rely on their weaknesses. You know, elk gotta have 6 gallons of water every other day. That time of year in Utah, I really focus on acorns a lot. They're trying to fatten up. There's green acorns. If it's a good crop, I'll shift my whole game. So whatever that weakness happens to be for that area, like if it's water, if water's scarce or what water's there is covered in cow tracks,
right?
Trying to find the clean water, that's huge. Yeah. So exposing weaknesses is always just prime, you know. But then we only get a couple weeks, and then it's rut time.
Yeah.
You know, and even though typically, because I'm chasing a lot of older age class bulls, they don't kind of join in on that Labor Day kind of pre-rut ruckus. Mm-hmm. But they do kind of follow the herds around. They're still in the area.
Shadowing them from afar.
So we still will follow the herds and see what's there. We never look at the herd bull and go, oh, that must be the biggest bull in the area. That's, you know, rookie mistake. But, you know, sticking around the herds and trying to keep track of the small bugles outside, see who's kind of just piping off every now and then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been bit by the small bugle thing before, though.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. We all have. That's why we know you got to check them all out.
I could swear this one was a freaking spike because it was that, yodely, really.
Yeah.
I thought at first it was a human.
Human,
but
yeah.
But I'm like, no, this is a real bull. And I'm like, man, that sounds like a spike, just barely, you know, barely little, you know, 3 second whines or whatever. And I'm like, oh man, I don't know. I don't know if we should waste our time. And I went over there and he was a giant, but he was a pretty big 5x5, you know, probably 320-inch 5x5.
I had a 380 bull sound like that once. And once he was on the ground, we saw he had a giant tine hole up in his palate.
Oh shit, he's a good guy.
Like he had
got impaled.
Yeah, something had gone up in there. So he was still bugling, but he was just letting off these little short 3 second screams.
Yeah.
You know, thinking a 320 bull's kind of around the corner.
Right.
And then you get to where you got clients and you're like, no, that's him. And they're like, no. You're like, no, this is the big bull. He's around the corner.
Trust me.
That's what he sounds like, I swear.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we've had. It's funny how some bulls have that super distinct well, they all have a distinct sound, but some of them are really distinguishable. I remember going to Oregon with the Angry Spike guys, and there was this bull they called Patrick. And they knew him for 3 years. They were on this bull, and they weren't able to kill him. And he had this just like, that's all he did. Like, he didn't do any. It was just like a growl.
Groan.
Yeah. And it was him. We've seen him twice while we were there, but it was just, it's funny how that, yeah, people, I've always tried to pay attention to kind of do that, you know, identification thing. Most of the time I'm just hunting for what I'm not hunting a target bull.
Yeah.
Not for myself and not for clients. I don't ever, I've done a pretty good job of weeding out people that are about inches. And then not because I have a thing, it's just because I don't have the time to provide that service for them.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Like if you want, you know, I want a 380 or nothing type, you know, I can't do that in my business because I just don't have the time, or their guides don't have the time to go do that.
Not a lot of people have time for that. Yeah. Like I have those bulls.
Yeah.
And I'll tell them like, hey, there's opportunity for that here.
Right. But
we might see one. But this is the reality of what we're hunting. Mm-hmm. If you're okay with that, jump on.
Yeah.
It's just like anything in life, anything you sell. I mean, you got your small business too, but when you're setting up a product, you got to have expectation and priorities. And if you can change those perspectives to meet what you want, yeah, come hunt with me.
Yeah.
If you want something different, Finch's is the goal, not my camp, dude.
Oh, see, that's good, man. That's good to hear that from you too. Because I know you shoot big. You guys shoot big bulls all the time. Yeah, I know there's, I actually don't ever really get it with the elk stuff. I've had coos deer clients were like, I got to get a 100-inch coos deer or nothing. And I'm like, listen, man, you got to, you don't have a unit where I can say you're going to see a 100-inch for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Can we? Yeah, absolutely we can.
Opportunity, yeah.
You know, and I'm like, if you want to pay for a scouting package in between, you know, beforehand, and I can have a guy go out there for 7 days before you show up, then yeah, maybe we can have one tied up at the ankle somewhere, you know, that we can find, but you know, find again. But you know,
you gotta love to hunt or don't show up.
Yeah,
like it's a hard thing.
Yep.
I was just at that Tennessee show. I went over to SCI.
Okay.
And got to meet a lot of really cool people, but never once, you know, this is the side of hunting that just really rubs me wrong, right? Never once it was like, what's the terrain like? What's this? It's
That's always like what the bullseye.
Picture price score.
Yeah.
How big? How much money? What are we talking?
Yeah.
And that's okay. Kind of.
Sort of. Yeah.
I can deal with maybe one or two of those guys a year. Like, because I do. I have to.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, I love the guys that are coming in like, hey, what do we got?
Yeah.
You know, got a handful of 360 bulls. We got one 380 bull. And if you want in a hole, we got a big, big, big bull.
Mm-hmm.
Your choice.
Like, right.
I just want to hunt.
Right.
Well, me too. Let's go look it up first. All right, sweet. You know,
see, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And you know, I would say 99% of the people that hunt with us do the same thing. They're that type of person. Mm-hmm. They want to enjoy it. We just had a father-son for the archery deer. They both got bucks. One got a mule deer, one got a coos deer. And they both also got their javelina too. They had the combo. And man, they were super cool. Just like awesome guys. They they bought a package at Pope and Young show, and it was really nice. I like those type of people. I want to circle back to the rut a little bit. So knowing that preseason scouting kind of goes out the door, what is your some of the ways that you're targeting and maybe even keeping track of where these bigger bulls are kind of roaming to once the rut starts, so you could still have an opportunity at them to call them in? Or
nice thing about guiding, like just having history on units, right, is typically, unless there's been a major change in the cow herds, matriarchs kind of determine where the rut goes. So there's a lot of times that, like, you kind of know where they're headed. It's just a matter of, like, I call it checking boxes. We just got to start checking boxes.
Yeah.
We're going to go check this area, and we're going to move to this area. Until we finally pull up the one we're looking for, or one that I know might lead me to the other one.
Are the boxes all just areas, going to check areas, or is there certain things too, like you're checking, I don't know.
No. Limited entry units are really big, and tags really aren't. I mean, there's areas, there's 70 tags, and all those guys have three dudes with them. But when it takes
not six, yeah.
Yeah, if it takes 8 hours to drive around the unit, I don't see a ton of hunters. It's not like the hunting pressure is going to change a bunch of what's going on. Mm-hmm. So when I say checking boxes, yeah, we might drive 2 hours and check one area, and we might drive back up and go check this other area.
Okay.
And it's all based on, you know, areas that naturally hold feed, cover, and obviously this is southern Utah. Mm-hmm. Elk are migrating off the top to the desert. I mean,
right.
So the more pinions I get in, the better. So,
gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, I mean, my personal tactic, I've always, when it comes to anything, the rut, deer, elk, whatever, I always go, like, cause you hear it all the time. Well, why are you going to check there? Those deer aren't going to, or those elk aren't going to be there now. But I'm looking for one old sign, mm-hmm. like rubs and all that stuff. That means mm-hmm. they were in there last year during the time that I'm going to be in there.
Yeah.
And then where all the cows are at, where all the, you know, where all the does at. And typically where they are at, that's where the boys are going to show up, right? Because not all, if you're in an area that did, like in Arizona, very little migration, very little areas that have any kind of migration. So if elk and deer are in an area and the females are in that area, typically they're going to still be there once the rut comes around. Sometimes they get pushed around a little bit, but not.
Yeah.
More so from hunting pressure than, you know, definitely not weather. Like, I mean, we get some extreme weather, but, I mean, it's Arizona, so it's not, like, it's not ridiculous.
Yeah, you still get summer monsoons in some of those areas, yeah.
Yeah, but see, for me, unless you noticed something different when you guys were scouting, but I don't feel like the monsoons move deer on or elk unless there was no water in that area and they weren't in there and now monsoon rolled through and now all the tanks are filled up again.
I was just going to say, if anything, the monsoons kept them tighter.
Yeah.
They weren't having to cover so much ground to find fresh water.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It becomes like, it's one of these catch-22s, I think, in dry areas. So, you know, New Mexico, southern Utah, Nevada, you know, the animals are really tied to water. And you want a lot of rain because you want good feed and you want them to put on antlers. And then you don't want a lot of rain because you want it pretty easy for you to figure out which water holes to shoot them off of. And it's like a catch-22. But if you pay attention, there's always seemingly like a water source that is spring-fed or whatever. Because one of the things that I noticed, you'll see there'll be, like, for instance, okay, it's raining. There's puddles everywhere, and the deer will still come out, or an elk will still come out to a water hole.
Mm-hmm.
They just pass, like, four other places where they could have drank. Like, they become almost...
That's where I try to explain to people that kind of elk have a whitetail behavior.
Yep.
And it's fact that wallows are scrapes. So if you understand what a scrape is for a whitetail, like, whitetails come in, and they lick a branch, and they scrape on the ground, and they piss in it, and they move on. And they'll do it at every scrape they see because it's like a time clock. And all they're doing is checking to see who hit that time clock, who was in last, what time it was.
Yep.
And then they move on. Well, wallows are the same thing with elk. So, yeah, there might be a fresh puddle sitting in the sandstone or sitting, you know, but he's going to walk to that wallow because he knows, I want to see who was here last. Do we have any cows in the area? How long ago were they here?
Right.
That's what he's trying to find out.
Yep. Yep. Makes perfect sense. It just goes back to, and I don't know if we said it earlier or not, but I know I've said it a bunch of times. It's learning. I think being a student of the species that you're going to hunt is probably the most important thing. It's like more important than, and I'm a big proponent of being in shape and practicing and all those things as well. But from a standpoint of success, knowing animal behavior is probably number one on the list.
Well, luck trumps. But
of course, of course.
But yeah, I think the more prepared you can be, the more knowledgeable about behavior, and the more boots on the ground. There's always this thing. I always feel like the guys who put in the most effort whether they're smart or stupid, or fate always just seems to walk a line for them. Mm-hmm. It's really strange. And so I'm like, even if you don't know what you're doing, put in the effort.
Yeah.
Make notes. Walk into an area. See what you can see. Like, actually pay attention to what's going on.
Right.
Like, you're going to figure it out. And all that time you're putting in there, I promise, is going to pay out. Maybe not by your brain size. It might just be luck or fate. But
yeah, and I don't know if it's – I think it's just a product of probability. Like, the more time you spend – people used to ask me all the time, oh, you know, why are you so successful? I'm like, well, how many days a year do you spend in the woods? Okay, 7 days. Well, you know, at that time, I was like, for 90 days? Like, mm-hmm. Of course I'm going to have more success than you, because I'm putting more time to try to have success.
Right.
You know, people look at, like, guys on Instagram or Facebook or whatever, and they're like, oh, man, this guy's always killing stuff. But, well, he spent 2 full weeks trying to kill that deer.
Or 3 years.
Like, whatever. Yes.
You know, he had 3 5-year, you know, 5-day seasons. Like,
yeah.
It took him that long to figure that out. Yeah, like, it's not. It's always that, like, yeah, tip of the iceberg shows the success, but right. That giant underwater mass of hard work.
Sure.
People don't see.
Well, and unfortunately, social media is kind of designed that way. We only show the best of who we are.
It's poison.
At any given point, you know, nobody knows what the hell's going on, and really in each other's lives, except for the stuff that we let you know, and nobody's putting out there. I just, you know, my wife, you know, boned the freaking the mailman and ran off. You know, nobody's putting that stuff on there. Like, you don't know,
right?
You know, you don't know that person spent 15 days, didn't see a freaking deer, and then, you know, finally came across one or whatever, and it happened to be this massive giant or whatever, mm-hmm. and he kills it.
Oh yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you said, it's a poisonous thing. I've fallen victim to it,
mm-hmm.
on multiple levels in my posting, because then you just, you know, you always want to just put, oh, I got to put something that people are, you know, excited about or whatever. You know?
I want the comments. I want the leads. I want people seeing it.
Yeah. And then at the same time, I've also found myself, I guess jealousy is probably a good word. Like, you look, oh, fuck, does this guy do this all the time? Like, then you're like, wait a second. First off, be happy for that person that he did that, okay?
Absolutely.
Or she did that, whatever. And
because we are a community.
Right.
Right.
So that, you know, that's my first realization. And then I'm like, well, think about it. What did that person do to earn that? You know, did he step out of the truck and it was standing right there and he shot a 400-inch bull? Probably not. You know?
I wish it happened like that.
Maybe if they go hunting with you, possibly. it's crazy. It's a crazy thing. I was having this conversation the other day. I'd almost be happy. I'd probably be happier if all social media just went away. And that's coming from a guy who made himself because of social media. Yeah, I mean, I had the TV stuff and all that stuff beforehand, before social media was big, but I didn't really gain traction, I don't think, until, you know, I started building John Stallone as a brand on, you know, the social media outlets. And it's still not giant. It's not like I'm freaking, you know, a household name or anything like that, but
I agree. You know, and that can go back as far as, like, forums.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you think back at, like, geez, what? It wasn't even 25 years ago. We were just on our shitters reading Trophy Hunter. Like, there wasn't, like, a lot there. And the guys who were in it were in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's kind of strange. I would be okay with it, too. And I'm with you. I'm a guy who... social media was my platform to kind of finally show people, like, this is who I am. Like, I actually do this.
Right.
I didn't start yesterday either. Like, and it was nice. But, man, it's turned into so, like, there's so much insecurity in our kids.
Mm-hmm.
Because all they see are the highlights. They feel like everyone's succeeding but them. It turns people away from hunting because they feel like, one, there's too much regulation. It's too hard to figure out how to do it. 2, everybody's successful but me. I've done this 2 years. I haven't even seen an elk.
Yeah.
And it's just like, no, I didn't either. Mm-hmm. Not till you're nine. Like, yeah. Like I didn't either. You're on the right track, dude. Stay with us.
Right.
And nobody's saying it because we're all showing the highlight reels. And so right. I'm with you. Like you almost want it to just go away or evolve into a way that we can actually show like, God, we all suck.
Yeah. Yeah. We do. We're all struggling.
We all suck. We're all dealing with physical issues. Like a lot of cancer going around right now and infidelity. People's got so many problems. Every person in this room needs a hug right now for one reason or another. I swear to you, they do.
Oh yeah. Abso-freaking-lutely.
But everyone wants to smile and
yeah.
See the guy who's always successful and give him a pound and
yeah.
It's strange.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a weird feeling. And I feel like even extra strange, I'm going to personally talk it from my standpoint, because I'm like in between. I'm not the most popular hunter out there, nor the most well-known, and I definitely have a fan base, and I definitely have, you know, so like I'm floating in this, you know, I could feel both sides of, oh, you know, I see guys that I want to be like, oh man, I want to go say hi to that guy, you know, and be a fanboy or whatever. And then at the same time, you have people coming up to you and you're like, and so you feel this, like, I don't know. It's a weird thing. Cause you want to be able to, the people that are coming up to you to say hi to you, you want to be able to talk about what we just say, hey, dude, just stick with it. You know, you're doing a good job. Just hey, mm-hmm. Don't be in it for pulling the trigger, be in it for all these things. And the rest will come and, you know, and have those conversations. And then at the same time, you're having some of the feelings that they're having because you're seeing these other things going on, you know. Dogs all over the place up here.
Yeah, it's starting to get crowded. It's a good thing we started early. This yeah. place is going to be nuts, dude.
Yeah, and it's only Friday. Yeah, tomorrow's supposed to be stupid.
Yeah, this show does well.
Yeah.
And I feel way more at home in this crowd. Dude, yeah. Like, I'm telling you.
It's your hometown, so.
Well, there's kinda. There's that, and there's just something about Western hunters.
Yeah.
Versus, I like, can I, dude, you know I'm a whitetail freak. Like,
yeah.
I have nothing against Eastern hunters, but going to the shows back east, the money thing, like, just turns my stomach a little.
Yeah.
Like, and we need money to make this grow, and we need efforts like what you guys are doing here to help regulate the.
Unfortunately, what you're talking about is a product of the system of reward that we put in place.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So even us, we're giving away this mule deer hunt. By the way, it's our whitetail hunt too, if you want. It's
our fault.
Yeah. It is. So I was just talking about this the other day, like a Humane Society of the United States, they don't say donate $100 and we're going to take you on this lavish bird watching trip. Right.
Mm-hmm.
They don't say that. They're like, give me $100 so we can save the cute and fuzzy bunnies.
Yeah.
You know? No, I have to bribe somebody with a freaking mule deer hunt.
With death.
Yeah. You know, to get you to care.
Yeah.
So we've created that.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah, it's a double-edged sword at all times. Like, we've made these things look cool. We've shown what animals can do. We've put the mark on their head.
Yeah.
And because of the bottom line of supply and demand, basic business, the dollars increased, it's forced out the little guy,
mm-hmm.
and it turns certain things ugly, but
yep.
all right back to it. That's kind of why I love this crowd.
Yep.
I know, I don't know, 85% of these guys could push me up the hill pretty fast, so
yeah,
I like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, the great thing about the West is we still had a shit ton of public land, and that's another reason why when you go back east,
hallelujah,
it's more competitive
mm-hmm.
there than it is. And you think it's competitive here. People that listen, you know, to this stuff and think they're like, oh, man, there's so many people on the trailhead and blah, blah, blah. Like, shut the fuck up.
Mm-hmm.
You got 100,000 acres.
Mm-hmm.
Go friggin' hunt New York or something, and you literally hunting in a 10-acre plot, and two other guys are going to walk by you with flashlights in the morning.
Right.
And you climbed up in their tree stand, waited quietly and in the dark. Like, that's what you deal with.
I backpacked into a place in Kansas on public land thinking, like,
yeah.
I'm away from everybody, and the lights come on, and there's four other bow hunters by me.
Flashing a light at you. Dude, I'm up here already. Yeah, it doesn't happen.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
you know, we got it pretty good out here, and that's, we need to keep it good.
Yeah.
That's part of the problem
for sure
that we're faced with right now.
Yeah.
Not just from the anti-hunters, but from our own ranks, yep. You know.
Agreed.
We do a little bit too much infighting and not paying attention to what's important. So anyways, yeah, this hunt, man, you should get in on it. It's the best odds in the whole show. 1 in 500 chance, $100. We're touting it as a mule deer hunt, but it's actually either sex or either species.
It's $100 in the pot.
$100 in the pot.
Done. Yeah,
and you get a Howlful Wildlife T-shirt and a Howlful Wildlife membership. So
tell that guy to put me in the pot right now.
All right,
I'm doing it on air.
All right, nice. Everett, gonna get Ryan side up
on air.
That's for that hunt right there.
Sweet.
That's awesome. Thanks, man.
Oh,
put
you
on the spot. But I appreciate it.
Yeah,
you
for
understand
sure. For sure.
Yeah, man, I think I won't beat a dead horse here, but I appreciate you coming on. Appreciate the stuff you do. And
it's nice to catch up. You're a good dude, John.
I try.
Yeah.
Not always, you know.
Yeah, I'm not either.
I got my faults. I try my best, you know. We were talking about social media. I mean, half the stuff I hear myself saying now, I mean, I feel like a giant hypocrite because I, you know, I put kill shots and I did all that stuff and I, you know, I just trying to do what's best for everybody, including myself, and realizing my own faults.
That's growth, right?
That's all I can ask of myself, mm-hmm. I think, at this point. So live and learn.
That's good. As long as we're growing and we're trying, dude, there's nothing worse than being stagnant and not making decisions.
Yeah.
If I could teach my kids anything, I'm like, the worst decision you can make is no decision. Like,
right.
Keep pushing on.
Yep.
Keep trying.
That's a great way. Great way to teach it, man.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on, man. And hope you get to stick around a little bit, hang out in the booths. Hopefully some people come by here and want to talk to you. So.
You bet. Right.
Thanks.
Okay, see you.
Hey, guys. Thanks for checking out the show. Really appreciate you. Keep those reviews and those comments coming. Helps us keep this free. Do me a favor, go check out Phoenix Shooting Bags. Use promo code John Stallone to save 20%, all one word. And check out Howlful Wildlife. Thank you very much, and we'll catch you on the next show.